Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Senate Committee on Commerce and Workforce Development. And we have two bills to take up today. We are going to start with Senate Bill 719, and I'll start by opening a work session on Senate Bill 719. And we do have an amendment to this bill, and I think we have somebody here who can explain that amendment. Jeremy, did you have anything?
Just the initial SMS that we've had previously. Senate Bill 719 establishes urban growth boundary expansion area revolving loan fund. It authorizes the state treasurer to issue $50 million in lottery bonds. It directs that monies raised from the sale of the bonds be deposited in the fund. It directs that monies in fund be continuously appropriated to the Economic and Community Development Department for no interest loans to local governments for infrastructure improvements in designated urban growth boundary areas. It limits repayment by local government of loan to revenues raised inside the urban growth boundary expansion area. It authorizes ECDD to secure repayment of amounts borrowed and authorizes the state of Oregon to withhold any monies due to a borrower in default. Declares an emergency effective July 1, 2009. And we have both, we have revenue and we have a fiscal on the bill and the combined dash one and dash two amendments.
And actually, before we go into that amendment, we did have a question for the treasurer's office come up at our previous hearing. We do have someone here from the treasurer's office to answer that question. So if you'd like to come forward and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Edie Kessel. I'm a cash management consultant with the state treasurer's office. And one of the things we do during the legislative session is to review bills for any accounts or funds that are set up at the state treasurer's office. We have done so with this Senate Bill 719. And the wording that is used in language used in Section 2 of this bill is very standard language on setting up funds at our agency.
Great. Okay. And I think that answers the question that came up previously. Are there any additional questions? Okay, great. Thank you very much for being here. Mm-hmm. Now, we have a dash one amendment, which I believe also incorporates the dash two. No, it does
not.
No,
I didn't see that.
Oh, okay. So could you please come forward then and tell us about these amendments?
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, Ron Papstor for the City of Gresham. We had the Dash 1 amendments at the previous public hearing. We requested the Dash 1 amendments for the Treasurer's Office to clarify some technical issues with the bond issuance, that DAS actually issues the bonds, not the Treasurer, that DAS is enabled to recover their issuance costs from the bond proceeds. So that's the Dash 1s. The Dash 2s came about as a result of a catch by the Special Districts Association in Section 2, Paragraph 5 on page 2 of the original bill. It was a little confusing. The original language said that a municipality that expands the urban growth boundary was eligible to secure loans from the fund. In a lot of cases around the state, that works perfectly well because the city that makes the decision to expand the UGB then also would be providing services and could avail themselves of the loans. In other metropolitan areas around the state, there's a regional government that actually makes the urban growth boundary expansion decision, and local jurisdictions then are the service providers. So the Dash 2 amendments just add a statement saying that those municipalities that ultimately will provide services to those UGB expansion areas are also eligible to secure loans.
Okay. Any questions for Ron, Senator Montes Anderson?
No questions.
Okay. Great. Okay, thank you very much for your explanation, and we are in a work session.
I'd like to make a comment, though, before
Sure, go ahead.
This is a great jobs bill. It truly is, and in watching the development that's happened in Gresham, we've struggled since we have such a low tax base. But once we get a street in, and one's just about half a mile from my house, everyone said, "Oh, this is a street to nowhere." We have great businesses that have, and actually a nice development, business development that has resulted from that. So I know that this will provide many jurisdictions around the state with some needed upfront capital, and I can guarantee that they will be paid off, and it'll be a great boon, I think, for our communities.
Okay, thanks for the comment. Yes, Senator George.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've been a huge cheerleader for this fund for quite some time. I want to make a quick little side note. I actually called the two communities in my district that I'm most concerned about are Sherwood and Gaston, because both of them have a huge amount of growth without the tax base to support it. One, and I'm going to support the bill, but one little interesting side note was the Gaston, when we actually clarified it, the bill says that they had to expand their urban growth boundary since 1997. And what's happened in the situation with Gaston is that the pressure of the urban growth boundary around the Portland metro area has led to leapfrogging out to Gaston, and they're not part of the metro urban growth boundary. And so what happened is that there was 50 acres that was inside the urban growth boundary that they're now being forced to provide infrastructure for, and a little town like Gaston has no money to do this kind of infrastructure. So they've annexed it recently to try to deal with the tax base, but because they hadn't expanded the urban growth boundary, they're not eligible for this fund. And it's kind of a little glitch, but it does talk about how this leapfrogging issue that we're having, where so much of the development, because it can't find land inside the current urban growth boundary metro, is leapfrogging out to these small little communities. And I think this is a continue to be a bigger and bigger problem. And so I just want to bring that up, that I think for Sherwood this is going to work great, but for the community of Gaston, which is even smaller and probably under more pressure, we still got some glitches to fix, and I'm sure we're going to work on it for many years in the future. So thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome.
And Madam Chair, I think, too, we need to bring up the issue that that this is really intended for communities that are really don't have a strong tax base, because I think we were talking about these communities that had a wealth of resources to put infrastructure in, and we, at least in Gresham, do not, and so we want to have that on the record too, although we can't force the powers to be to choose, but I think that hopefully that will be one of the criteria that they will look at, is the resources that these individual municipalities and cities have.
Great. Thank you for making that point, and I'm sure they're listening. And any further discussion? We are in a work session. Senator Telfer.
Madam Chair, I would move the dash one to Senate Bill 719.
Senator Telfer moves the dash one amendment dated March 30th of 2009 to Senate Bill 719. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Senator Telfer.
Madam Chair, I'd move the dash two dated April 9th, 2009. To Senate Bill 719.
Thank you. Senator Telfer has moved the dash 2 amendment dated 4-9 of 09 to Senate Bill 719. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Senator Telfer.
Madam Chair, I would move Senate Bill 719 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation and request that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Telfer moves Senate Bill 719 as amended by the dash 1 and dash 2 amendments to the floor with a do pass recommendation and requests that a subsequent referral to Ways and Means be added to the bill. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Pam, would you please call the roll?
Aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries. And this, I suppose we should add a carrier to this, which would be obviously Senator Montes Anderson, in case they rejected our suggestion, but I don't think we're going to need that. And with nothing further on this bill, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 719 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 863. And Jeremy?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 863 authorizes the Economic and Community Development Department to reimburse local filmmakers for all or portion of expenses paid in Oregon to produce film. Defines local filmmaker, continuously appropriates 5% of monies in the Oregon Production Investment Fund to reimburse local filmmakers for expenses of producing local films. The bill has no revenue impact, and we do not have a fiscal on it.
Okay, and it looks like this is Senator Telfer's bill, and it looks like she's joined us on the other side of the dais. So good to see you there, and we'll look forward to your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. What's left of you? Senate Bill 863 is really a carving out of an existing funding source with the Oregon Production Investment Fund. It's for more Oregon-based filmmakers. We call it the Indigenous Oregon Production Investment Fund. There's a lot of people here that know a whole lot more about filmmaking than I do, and I'm going to let them speak to the bill in detail. I will say, though, that One of the keys to this bill is the long-term creative stability that it offers. Again, we're not asking for more money. We're just asking to carve out 5% of the existing fund to be utilized for this. Oregon's creative capital, the writers, the directors, the electricians, set builders, makeup artists, and location scouts, to name only a few, are what support the larger productions that shoot in Oregon. The problem is that the large productions only account for a small part of what it takes to make a sustainable industry. It is the local producer and local productions that provide month-to-month, year-to-year jobs that keep Oregon's creative capital here and working. Some of the areas of sustainable industry that I want to address would be, or mention, is that more film productions in Oregon year-round means more experience for cast and crew. Oregon will then have more qualified people to fill the big films, TV shows, that come from out of state, thus making Oregon look even more attractive. This bill will also address the fact that Oregon-based projects build and maintain a solid crew base for all film projects, whether from in-state or out-of-state. Money that funds Oregon-originated projects stays in Oregon, not in Hollywood. Oregon filmmakers want to keep filming in Oregon. Supporting the local, smaller-budget producer today is investing in the future, bigger-budget producers of tomorrow. And finally, I want to say that the financial support for lower budget projects quickly encourages development of a stronger infrastructure, which then makes Oregon more attractive to outside production companies and provides more avenues for retaining pre-production, production, and post-production dollars. I'm happy to answer any questions, but you might want to wait and talk to the more savvy. I even have trouble with an Instamatic, so...
Thank you, Senator Telfer. Are there any questions for a colleague? Okay. Thank you. Please rejoin us up here. And we have several people signed up, at least one of whom has come from more than 100 miles away. So let's call Michael Reedy, Tom McFadden, and David Kress, if the three of you would like to come forward. And welcome to the Senate Commerce and Workforce Development Committee.
Thank you, Senator.
Whichever one of you wants to go first, go ahead.
That's right.
I can do that. I'm Tom McFadden. I am the Executive Director of the OMPA. We're the Oregon Media Production Association, and I think my role is to make sure that you all understand that the industry really exists. It's people don't always think of Oregon as the enormously influential creative center that it is, but it truly does, and my association has been working for 28 years to align the interests of the crew, the vendors, the freelancers, even the additional support, the tourism services that benefit from this industry. And one of the main goals that we do is to collectively market ourselves for those out-of-state productions. But over the years, we have grown a tremendous indigenous industry in Oregon. thanks largely to the quality of life in Oregon. It attracts some really fantastic people. I and my board fully support SB 863, and it's on the grounds of it's as a means of creating jobs and to stimulate Oregon's culture of creativity and the creative economy. I mentioned it's a strong and vibrant community. We've published this directory, which is actually now mostly lives online, but we still have this vestigial hard copy book that we do every year. And this represents 1,500 crew positions. That's about 900 individuals, many of whom are performing multiple jobs. And and I guess from my experience in terms of the type of people that it supports, probably 85 to 90% of the people who are in my membership work on these productions. There's about 10 to 15% of the people who are producing these projects, and it's a very special type of person that can migrate between creative production and the business of creating a successful film project. And when it works, it's an incredibly powerful combination. Those people who create these productions don't just live in Los Angeles. They live here in Oregon, and naturally they don't all succeed all the time. Like any enterprise, we often see a few failures with every positive achievement. And it's my job, and I would hope that it's our job on workforce development and for commerce and workforce development, to increase the odds of survival. And Senate Bill 863 does this, obviously, by offering resources. But I believe just by the exercise of actually asking these independent producers to accurately track their costs and take a long-term view of their budget so that they can start thinking of their product as a investment of their time and perhaps other people's time and money, that it actually helps groom them to be moving from this lower budget threshold to the higher budget thresholds of some of the major projects that Oregon enjoys. This isn't our only effort. In fact, this is the first bill that OMPA has participated, well, I guess other than the formation of the OPIF itself. What we do is we regularly stimulate that type of production and that type of growth of the industry. In fact, on Saturday we're holding a fairly extensive workshop on film financing for the independent filmmaker. And it is, again, exactly the same mission, which is to ask those independent producers to start to think about their budgets as an investment and share best practices so that they can be continuing to grow the industry. So I just want to let you know, this is an ongoing effort for us, and we really appreciate the support and the consideration of the committee.
Thank you for your testimony. Please go ahead.
Michael Reedy, Bend, Oregon, independent producer, also with Film Oregon Alliance. Good day, Madam Chair, Madam Vice Chair, Senators, fellow members of the film community. As I stated, I'm Michael Reedy and an independent producer. I'm privileged to say that I'm also a recently elected member of the Board of Directors for the Film Oregon Alliance as their Industry and Legislative Relations Director. Film Oregon Alliance is a Central Oregon-based regional organization that is dedicated to the advancement of film and media production. Well, as you know, I'm here today to speak about film production and SB 863 specifically. Oregon has long been a regional and national leader when it comes to its efforts to attract production into the state, and it's these efforts actually that have placed our state at the head of the crowd of location choices for filmmakers to produce their projects. And as you know, there's a sister bill to SB 863, which is SB 621, and it's currently in the Senate and is aimed to further continue the Oregon film finance incentives. As you're likely aware, the state of Washington actually has followed suit recently and nearly unanimously passed their Senate bill, SSB 5856, to expand incentives for film industry within that state. And their purpose was clear, Senators. They intend to help bring a balanced playing field with neighboring Oregon and Canada, and that was stated on news.opb.org. And Washington's high level of importance placed upon film incentives is actually further demonstrated by Washington State Democratic Rep. Phyllis Kenny's comment that, quote, "We have to put the incentives out there. We have to make sure this is the best place to do business, and I think we're doing that with this bill." Well, bravo to Washington for following Oregon's lead, but as I see it, their effort to level the playing field is actually a call for Oregon to lead once again. Having been a leader in luring production to this state, it is time for Oregon to once again separate itself from Washington State, other states with incentive programs, and Canada as well. Oregon really must forge ahead in a new and innovative ways to lead the region and even nation in promoting film production, and SB 863 is the next logical step that takes our state ahead of the pack. And with SB 863, it provides a highly skilled workforce, and a highly skilled workforce is needed to stay ahead of our competitors, which is what Washington and other states with incentive programs are, our competitors. Having a highly skilled workforce is always top of the list when any business is considering where to produce their goods, whether that is widgets or films. And while Oregon possesses exceptional talent and skilled labor, SB 863 will help take this state's production resources to a higher level than those of our competitors. I see the resulting impact of this bill like that of off-Broadway plays or baseball spring training. It will provide industry professionals with a greater consistency of ongoing work that will continue to further and hone their skills for when they are called upon to perform at the highest level of their profession. This will make Oregon's own film incentive program and this year's Oregon SB 621 an even greater success. As a producer, the passage of SB 863 will impact me directly in a variety of ways. This bill will allow me to stretch my budgets and get the most out of every dollar spent, with the return being a greater quality product. Also important to a higher quality product, it will keep the workforce more active and better skilled, thus making my business and projects more successful. Equally vital, this skilled workforce will be retained within the state, because there is more work in the state, and it will not be lost to our competitors who may offer more opportunities. In turn, other skilled talent will be drawn to Oregon because of the amount of work available here. This equation equals a greater number of higher quality vendors for me to contract with, and that will make me more successful. It will also impact my revenue directly by providing more job opportunities. To finish, in my eyes, this is an economic development bill. Simply put, SB 863 will make a great workforce better, bring more job opportunities to the state, it will likely draw more filmmakers from other states, and it will grandly demonstrate Oregon as the leader in film production incentive programs. SB 863 will bring greater rewards both financially and in image than what the state will invest, which is time. Madam Chair, Madam Vice Chair, Senators, thank you all very much for your time and consideration regarding SB 863, and I look forward to seeing this important bill pass during the 2009 legislative session with regards and appreciation.
Thank you for your comments, and thank you for traveling such a distance to.
For a good reason, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you all for considering this. Really appreciate it. My name is David Kress, and I'm a film producer. I've worked in Portland and around the state for about 20 years in the film industry. I owned a company called Food Chain Films for about 13 years that specialized in television commercials and music videos. In the last 4 years, I've been making a living as an independent narrative feature producer. The reason I wanted to come today and offer some testimony is that since I've been here so long, I was around for the time before there was OPIF, and OPIF and any incentive, and there was really a boom and bust cycle in the state in terms of the outside production coming in. It was much more at the whim of what was going on in the currency markets, and then after the OPIF was passed, and we've always had a very strong office of a very strong film office that's helped guide the way for films to come here. And that had a benefit to me. I always had to put my long-term thinking cap on for that benefit, because in the short run, it may even be a problem for me if The Hunted was in town using all the lights and all the electricians. I would have to sort of, if I wanted to make my television commercial at that moment, I had to sort of bide my time until they were done. But I knew that in the long run, the education that those guys, those Oregonians, were getting working side by side with some of those, the key people from Los Angeles, and some of the tricks they were learning and the equipment they were using would be something that could be incorporated onto a project I would do in the future, and that would just in the end make our company more successful. And our company was successful largely not from doing work with Oregon clients, but bringing clients from all over the country to Oregon to do jobs with us. And we had a pretty good portfolio, so we were able to do that. But part of the reason we were able to offer that portfolio was the strength brought to us by the freelance community and the other vendor portion of it. If you think of it, making a film is a lot like being a general contractor. Being a producer is a lot like being a general contractor. You've got your bricklayers and you've got your cement masons and the carpenters and the electricians, the other people that come to make it. Well, it's very similar in our business, and it was very useful to have that infrastructure built up through OPIF. There were a few things missing, though, and I see IOPIF as kind of addressing the couple of missing pieces. One issue is that when the production companies come from outside, they typically hire a lot of electricians and a lot of grips and a lot of that kind of thing, but they typically bring with them the writers, the directors, the DPs, the key costumers, those kind of positions, which are, when they're not here, there's not a reason to be putting other productions into production. Now, if you look at the most regional, or if you look at the most successful regional filmmaking communities, generally they have something like a Gus Van Sant or something like that, where a homegrown director or writer is there giving the, and when you live someplace and you tell stories for a living, you tend to really tell stories about where you live. Like, for instance, Gus has made 10 films, 4 of them here and counting. I think another one's on its way. I produced Paranoid Park for Gus, so I have an intimate knowledge of how he thinks in terms of his storytelling. A lot of those stories are Oregon-based stories or Northwest-based stories. So if we could help jumpstart that creative capital, if we go back to the analogy of general contractors, we need to help the architects and the engineers as well as the cement masons and the electricians. And I think this goes, it's a modest plan to start helping that area. The other issue that I think kind of was created by OPIF that needs to be addressed is a fairness issue. Essentially, the production companies that are the most likely to benefit from this economically are the biggest players. Only a few indigenous players actually benefit, but most of our work is granted through a competitive bidding process. So as a big player, I have a competitive advantage over a couple smaller players based on state incentive money. It just feels like, as a point of fairness, if we lower that threshold, it will be less likely to arbitrarily be a barrier to smaller, newer kinds of companies and people doing that work. So those were the two things that I thought that this bill really, thank you very much for sponsoring it, and thank you guys for considering it, that this bill really helps make the package much more complete. And if in the future there's someplace new and way less expensive to do your producing in, whether it was Canada a few years ago or someplace else, if we have homegrown storytellers and producers and directors and directors of photographer, we're going to tell those stories about Oregon because we live here and we know those stories, and those are the stories we feel like we need to tell. Appreciate the time.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions for this panel?
Yes,
Senator Ronna Sanderson.
First of all, and I don't know if you can answer the questions, but how do we get money in the Oregon Production Investment Fund right now? How is that fund funded?
It's funded through the sale of tax credits.
To
individuals, I believe. To individuals who want to purchase tax credits at that are offered. They go into a fund which the Oregon Film Office then uses to distribute upon receipt of expenditure receipts from the productions.
I was just wondering, wondering what who buys the tax credits? I mean,
individuals who need the who can benefit from the purchase. My understanding is that there's a discount associated with those tax credits to make them more attractive.
Okay. I just don't know enough about, tax credits to what? There's all kinds of tax credits, and tax credits for the film industry? Tax credits for the film industry.
Well, no, I don't think you need to be in the film industry purchase the tax credit, so I might not be the best. Beyond that answer, I don't know anymore.
Senator Telford, can you shed some light on this?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe that there are tax credits in general. There's a limit of $5 million that goes into OPIF right now. So the pool from all these tax credits out there that the state gets from people buying these credits goes into a pool for $5 million. There's another bill in the Senate that wants to increase that, but this, what we're doing right now is just asking in 863 to take 5% of that $5 million to use for independent filmmakers.
And then follow up on that.
Yes,
and
follow up.
So I would also like to know who this money goes to. Are there other people now that are going to say, well, I want my 5%, I want my 5%, I need to, just wondering, where does this money go to now, and who makes those decisions?
Well, the monies that come in through OPIF currently, the State's Production Incentive Fund, are granted to producers who provide an adequate amount of receipts, and I think the threshold is $750,000 that they have to spend in Oregon, upon which they receive an amount back which is calculated to be equal to the minimum amount of revenue the state earns from those productions through the taxes, payroll payroll taxes and the other income the state might receive from fees or as the money expands through the economy, the revenue that would be generated to the state would ultimately be neutral, if I'm making myself clear.
No, I understand
right.
that. I was just wondering who won't be getting it if you get it. I wished that someone from the Oregon Production Investment Fund could come and hand us out
the list of who's received the project
who's
money.
Who's received the
money.
Well,
we can give you a short list of the projects that have been attracted and ultimately goes to the production companies, towards the budget to producing the projects like Leverage, which is shooting 14 episodes currently. What are other productions?
But, if I understand your question, though, what you're really asking is somebody's getting these monies right now.
Mm-hmm.
If we redirect them, who are they being taken away from?
Right. Well, you want to answer this, David?
Yeah, I think so. I think I understand the concern. It makes a lot of sense. What happens now is that producers who want to enjoy the benefit have to spend at a fairly high threshold in order to get any benefit. So what we're asking is a tiny bit, 5% of that, be set aside for some producers who are spending at a lower threshold. And the thinking, the calculus for us is that indigenous producers who don't have those big of budgets could still benefit on their smaller budgets and still create still do that kind of job creation. And so really, if there's a loser in this, it's 0.5% of those bigger productions, and that money is redirected in favor of the much smaller producer, and in fact they have to be Oregon residences.
Mm-hmm. But and follow up, yeah, that but I would really like to have a spreadsheet from the Oregon Production Investment Fund, because I'm all for supporting filmmakers and small filmmakers. I mean, 90% of our business is small mm-hmm. here in the state mm-hmm. of Oregon. But I still would like to have a broad picture of who makes the decisions, how do they make the decisions, why aren't they doing this now? I mean,
okay, I think, yeah. And we can ask for that information and get it to you. And Senator Telfer, looks like she's got.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it kind of in a nutshell, right now, those that can afford to do these larger projects, which will be able to utilize the current funds, basically are coming out of Hollywood.
Yeah.
And so.
It's not fair.
But what we're trying to do is generate some monies for the lower cost projects and incentivize some of our local filmmakers and get them the capability to get a little money that will help them do some independent films here and get some good training and establish some good crews. I would almost call them crews, teams, mm-hmm. so that also they would be able to be used for the larger productions that will still come here. I mean, it's just a small portion, $250,000 out of $5 million is what we're asking for.
Right.
And so just to incentivize and allow some of the local independent indigenous filmmakers here in Oregon to be able to utilize the funds and do some films.
And I can answer any more questions that I can help with now or later. I mean,
Madam Chair, I find this very interesting because I remember when we first started wanting to attract the major film industry into Oregon because they bring so much business to us, a huge amount of business to Oregon when a big, big crew comes in. But I like the concept.
Yeah, thank you. Well, we feel like it's if there's one answer to your question is the production, the people who are not receiving the benefit from the incentive now are essentially the indigenous producers who don't have typically $750,000 budgets. They operate on a budgetary level of $100,000 to $300,000 or $500,000, which is a more economically realistic scale for them to be operating on as independent filmmakers outside of Hollywood. So they're the ones who are currently not receiving it. The money would ultimately, the 5% would be competing with those larger productions out of Hollywood, if that makes sense.
Are there additional questions? Yes, Senator George.
In full disclosure, in college I had a job with King World when they shot the Copperfield special out in Tillamook, and I got to be the babysitter for Jane, what's her name? She was in Jane Seymour's Children. I babysat her Children for a
job
week.
Job creation?
Yeah, job creation. But so in full disclosure,
you
I had
any
a...
license or anything?
No, they just let me drive. I drove her over. I picked her up at the airport, her and her kids, and drove them over to Tillamook. And we
stayed. Your residuals?
Yeah. Anyway, but I don't want to throw a wet blanket on something, but I've been in the building too long, and I'm getting a little jaded about certain things.
Sure,
so
sure.
My first session was here was in 87, and 85 and 87, I went back and looked to make sure I had my years right, were the big years when we actually established the film office. And I've been in the building off and on since then, and so when I look at kind of the growth of this, the idea of creating the office was to help a startup industry in the state of Oregon. Then once we started that office, which was supposed to provide some infrastructure support, then we got into, well, we need some startup capital to get the talent here in Oregon. And so that was the next step. And then now we've attributed $5 million of general fund tax credits to help support the industry, some additional, I may be wrong on that, but we have some tax credits that draw on state funds. And so what I'm trying to get at is that we're now at 21 years of, in essence, subsidizing an industry. And looking into the future, when do you see the state's role ending in this? When do we lose the obligation to help start up this industry? And when do we finally say you're a mature enough industry that you can go off on your own? When was that date?
Well, if the state decided it wanted to make it more challenging for businesses to succeed in Oregon, then the state would effectively increase the tax burden on those startup businesses that are independent productions. So I would say that, like I said before, it's a matter of increasing the odds of survival for economic development projects, job creation projects. I also think that when it comes to budgeting, we call the program revenue neutral because in the situation with the out-of-state productions, that's found money, essentially. We're, the way I understand it, and I may be corrected, but we're enticing business to do business to locate here from out-of-state on those large projects. Now, in the case of IOPIF, what we're doing is we're encouraging by means of displacing the revenue that we would have received from taxes, not general fund revenue, but displacing the money we would have received from taxes, to encourage the indigenous industry to continue to build and maintain the infrastructure so that we can continue the job creations program within the state with budgets that are generated in the state.
So, follow-up manager.
Follow-up.
I guess what I'm trying to get at is that I'm willing to go along the path of saying we need to support a startup industry. But what you're saying to me is that as far into the future as you can possibly see, this particular industry is going to need a state. I mean, any industry can make the argument. I mean, all the businesses I own could make the argument that we support so much more
sure.
than some subsidy that we could get. I mean,
sure.
if we started subsidizing every business I was involved in, you know, it gets ridiculous at some point. And what I'm trying to say is that is there ever a point upon where we stop subsidizing?
Right.
And the industry is healthy in its own right. I mean, do you see that 5 years from now, 10 years from now? When is the cutoff point where mm-hmm. we can say this is a mature industry that no longer needs public subsidy?
Well, I guess the question is, I mean, how long were we a resource-based economy in Oregon? How long were we a manufacturing or materials-based economy? How long is it going to grow for us to be a information age economy? I mean, I think that there will be a day when we will, there could be a day when we will be a significant economic force such as is Hollywood is to California. But I can't say that we would necessarily want to put a time limit on it in terms of years. I would say let's continue to build on the type of industry that's non-resource consuming, that is to say it's green, it's limited environmental impact, and it's successful in attracting talent to Oregon and building the creative economy. It has a lot of advantages, but in specific answer to your question, I couldn't put a short-term date on it.
Thank you.
Senator Telfer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In answer to Senator George's question, OPIF is, in addition to just helping a startup, it's moved into helping competition because we are competing with Washington and Canada to attract filmmakers here. And, for instance, the Eco Northwest Report did a study that showed in 2007-08 and 2008-09, there was $10 million in the incentives, and the overall economic impact of productions that received incentives was $180 million. So the incentives are there also to attract these production companies here to Oregon instead of going to Canada, Washington, or even staying in California. And it generates $180 million for a $10 million investment. So it's more than just helping a startup industry. It's also to incentivize them coming here to Oregon versus going to another location.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you all for
your time. And it looks like we have two more witnesses, Devin Lyon and Kevin Curry. Good afternoon.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, Devin Lyon.
Hi. And I'm Kevin Curry, and we're both with Lyon Films, which is a Portland-based production firm.
And we were, actually I'd like to maybe spend just a minute or so continuing to follow the thread that you started, and then we'll hopefully give you a few real-world examples of a small boutique production firm that could directly benefit from IOPIF. But first, Senator George, or Madam Chair, Senator George, this money from the sale of the tax credits doesn't go to the general fund. It is, in fact, a separate fund that's administered by the state treasury. So it's not. That's my understanding from the bill as OPIF mm-hmm. currently exists.
Madam Chair, I guess the question is, as I understand it, there are tax credits against your personal income taxes that you can buy, which means those dollars come out of the general fund. That's what I was trying to get at. I think that's how
instead
that works.
Instead of the money going to general fund.
It's $5 million out of the general fund, as I understood how the process was.
Madam Chair, Senator George, now I see your distinction.
Gotcha.
You're not saying necessarily that it's being the money itself isn't sitting in the general fund and is sort of being earmarked. It is sitting in a completely separately administered fund, but you're saying it's taking away from money that could be going into the general fund. Madam Chair, as Senator Telfer mentioned earlier, another distinction that was clear in the Eco Northwest study that was commissioned by the Oregon Film and Video Office that Senator Telfer mentioned is it's my understanding it's not just a revenue-neutral tax credit. I understand there are all sorts of different types of tax credits that have all sorts of different benefits or burdens to the state, but that this particular tax credit is not just revenue-neutral, but their study has returned for every dollar in tax credit, it's about $1.14 in actual revenue return to the state, just because of the amount of work that's being brought into the state, it's far greater than the actual tax credits that were sold to lure it in. Does that make sense? And so I think the ROI is clear. Philosophically, I get where you're coming from with questionable tax credits. I mean, I think you know that. But in this case, I think it's clearly a sort of a sound tax credit. And one that's why we not only support this Senate Bill 863, but the other bill that was mentioned earlier for the extension of OPIF.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, good.
I talked a lot.
We wanted to talk to you a little bit about
if you could please identify yourself again.
Oh, sure. Kevin Curry with Lion Films, and our production firm is based in the Portland area. And we actually do work all over the state of Oregon, actually, and regionally as well. We wanted to give you a little bit of a real-world example of what the Senate Bill 863 would do to help us as a growing boutique firm. We're about 3 years old, and then each year our revenues have grown, and as that happens, so have the size of our productions. And so now we're getting into a production level where we are bidding out productions that are in the $300,000 to $500,000 range, where we're developing concepts that we're then going to find investment for, to find the money to help fund this. And one of the great benefits that the Indigenous Production Fund would do for us is to give us another arrow in our quiver when we're talking to investors to say this project is eligible for a rebate that once you add up both rebates, both on labor and on production services, can be up to 18%. And that means a lot to an investor to know that, off the bat, the $300,000 that they invest in ours, they're going to get 18% of that back at the end of the production. So for us, it gives us the ability to be, as businessmen, to go to those people and show them it's going to be a sound investment, a better investment, they're going to be getting a portion of it back. The other thing that it really does for us is it really helps us, as was stated in the previous speakers, improve the talent and keep the talent working in Oregon. The big films that come through, when Twilight comes through or when Management come through as they did last year, those will ramp up for 3 or 4 months and keep people employed for about 3 or 4 months. But it's the small productions like the ones that we specialize in, the smaller budget productions, that help fill the gaps for those people. It helps fill the sound guys' work, the makeup people, the writers, and things like that. And so that's another benefit of this fund by helping production companies like ours. And as we always like to say, that, you know, we have shutter-ready jobs. These jobs that are jobs that we can turn around. We don't have to wait for the ground to be developed to get these or a building to be built. We can turn these jobs around quickly and get our production started quickly. So they're jobs that we can ramp up for very, very quickly. And then just generally, it's good for PR for Oregon. It shows that Oregon is encouraging this kind of productive and creative climate, that is supporting its local indigenous. I think that's one of the best things about this bill, is that it is only, you have to be an Oregon-based firm to benefit from it. As Senator Mona Sanderson said, she'd much rather be giving some of this money to the locals than to Hollywood. And right now, OPIF, with its job of bringing in outside productions, typically benefits the larger out-of-state productions. So we're just asking for a little piece of that to help firms like ours.
And Senator, Madam Chair, one last piece. I don't think the industry in any way, shape, or form is coming to this body and asking you to make, for this body to make a bad decision, business decision for the state of Oregon so that our businesses can make better business decisions. We think that the data shows that this type of tax credit that funds this fund that's, you know, that has already existed for years is a sound decision. And we're just asking for you to carve out the small percentage of this for us indigenous producers to move forward. And very much would appreciate a works, you know, works session scheduled to be scheduled at some point because we think this has a lot of merit. And with that, I'll close unless you have any questions.
Okay, any questions?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Prezant.
So tell us what you think your return has been as to how it benefits the state. You've heard Senator George wanting to know how far in perpetuity do we go. Just give us some examples of how much you think that these credits have actually brought back money to the state.
You know, if you give me a second, the data that we have has been provided by the Oregon Film and Video Office, and I'll be more than happy to leave it out. You know, the office makes this available as well. Senator Telfer, if I understand your question correctly, Senator Brzezinski, some of the data that she read earlier.
Right. But for your company, do you think that's reflects what's what the return is, because we are talking about indigenous productions.
Seeing that this has not happened yet, I believe it will. Clearly, if I can go to, let me give you an example. We, a year and a half ago, produced a film, and the budget was about $250,000. And had this type of credit been in place, I could see the budget in that film having been increased, more of those type of films coming into town. Now, in that particular case, it was a lucky circumstance because the executive producer who was funding it had a message movie that he wanted to make, and he was also indigenous, so it all stayed here anyway because he happened to be here. But in a lot of cases, what we're going to do is take a concept out of state and try to bring a funding source in state. We would be the indigenous rapper that would then employ indigenous folk to produce this. So I see it helping us go forward. I can't quantify the number because it hasn't happened yet, but if I can offer an 18% rebate on an investment, that seems like a fair argument to come here instead of shooting in Southwest Washington.
It certainly is. We're competing with a lot of times the same investors that other people all around the country who want to make independent films are as well. So having that rebate is just one more competitive advantage that we would have to try to bring that money to Oregon so we can make that film here.
Any other questions? Senator George.
Guys, I guess this is what I'm trying to get at, is that I think about my own industry in food processing. We got this state agency that goes out and markets food processors. I don't really agree with it, meaning I suppose I benefit from it because they bring us business. Mm-hmm. But in essence, I'm not sure it's worth the value to the state to do my marketing for me. In our specific industry of hazelnuts, we have what's called the Hazelnut Marketing Board. That's a tax that we put on ourselves. It's actually through a federal marketing order, but we could set the same thing up for the film industry. What happens is we actually tax ourselves each by per ton of hazelnuts that run through all of our processing companies, and we put them in a pool that we pay for out of our own pocket, and that pool is used to market the industry as a whole. So I guess what I was trying to get at in the generally is that I don't have a problem, and I see, for instance, the sort of long the benefits of the state participating and starting the industry up, but at some point, I would like to see the industry switch it around a little bit. Rather than us come up with the money, we've given 20-some-odd years of startup. Maybe what we should do is change the funding source to where the industry has a tax on every employee who works on a big money film. That additional tax would go to fund the program for the future rather than continue to come out of the general fund. What I'm saying is it seems like to me the industry is getting to the maturity point where it should be taxing itself to pay for the promotions just like my specific industry does. If somebody tried to get rid of the general food processors marketing board, I'd agree with that. I think it's kind of a waste because I don't think it's appropriate for other people to subsidize my business. But I do think it's appropriate to have a mechanism, and we could do it, if you guys would do it yourselves. And I guess I'm trying to get to the idea of when does the industry then take on the financial obligation to tax itself to pay for this program rather than us pay for it. That's what I'm trying to get at. Do you see that in the future?
Senator George, Senator Rosenbaum, I think every state does their incentives differently. and their rebates are differently, and sometimes they're a tax, they're a reduction in your payroll tax or something like that. And sometimes it's a rebate check, like is what Oregon has done by selling the tax credits. I think if the tax credit wasn't returning so much revenue above and beyond, the dollar tax credit leads to $1.14 in revenue, so it does make more money for the general fund in Oregon, I think that we would want to look at a different mechanism. But my feeling is that it's working, and it's working well to incentivize outside money, which is outside productions, to come into Oregon and spend money here and hire our people and buy our goods and services, and it's actually returning more revenue to the general fund. And I think that's the kind of tax credit that works and you would want. But I can, so from my standpoint, in my opinion, if we were returning anything less than a dollar, then I would say, yeah, it should be looked at and changed. But I think you're getting a benefit. I think Oregon is getting an increased revenue, general fund revenue, by doing this program.
I'm not sure. Okay, I don't want to belabor the point, because I don't think perhaps necessarily you'll agree with me on this. But I guess what I'm trying to get at is I think any industry that makes a profit and is paying income taxes is exceeding any subsidy we would give to them. By definition, I mean, clearly my industry is far exceeding any subsidy that we get from the state. I mean, so it's multiples of that. And I think that what you're arguing is something that's true for machinists. I mean, should we subsidize machine shops down the road because they have a multiple that exceeds the general fund obligation? And what I'm trying to say is that at some point I would hope the industry has a conversation with itself to separate itself from state funding and get to an internal funding source, because you're mature enough to do so. And that's all I'm trying to say, is that we're under a huge amount of pressure to fund schools, for instance. I'm making choices, and when an industry gets big enough that you have out-of-state corporations who make millions and millions of dollars on these movies, and we're taking dollars out of classrooms, it's hard for me to eventually rationalize that with an unending end. When I see industries all over the state of Oregon who have asked for startup capital, like the film industry has, and then move to a self-funding mechanism that I think would be really healthy for your industry. And that's all I'm trying to say. This bill here, Madam Chair, really is just trying to get additional part of that money into the local guys, and so I don't have a problem with how this bill does it. I just think the broader policy thing needs to be discussed usually within that. So thank you, Madam Chair, for the latitude you've given me today.
Actually, those were questions that could be asked about a lot of things.
Yeah, I agree.
I thought for a minute Senator George was on revenue, looking at the expansion of looking at all tax credits that we currently give and see which ones are...
Senator Burdick has had a great influence on
it. And Senator Jaffer.
Well, I just wanted to say that OPIF right now is... the policy is more... we want hazelnuts here in the state of Oregon, and so we want to incentivize people to come bring their hazelnut growing capability here instead of going to Washington or Canada. So, you know, I think it's that too. It's to get them to bring those hazelnut.
If we want to subsidize the planting of hazelnuts across the Willamette Valley, I will vote for that bill right now. I'll even put in an amendment to the bill.
I don't think the relating fuzz on this bill will allow that. Okay, seeing no further questions for you, thank you very much for your testimony. And members, I think those are all the witnesses that we had signed up, and I see no one else in the room. So I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 863, and committee is adjourned.